All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Real Estate Radio Show. My name is Larry Shackman. I'm going to be your host and real estate therapist for the next about 45 minutes. We have a great guest we're going to bring on here shortly, Jay Clopton. And before we do, first of all, I just want to thank everybody for joining us again. Like I said, we have a great show lined up today. Got a lot going on in the real estate market out there between Fed rates dropping, mortgage rates dropping, or, you know, at least staying steady right around 6%, and just a lot going on generally. As always, again, my name's Larry Shackman. I run a group of realtors out here in Chicago Metro at LPT Realty called Lux Group, and we primarily handle the Chicago metro area, even though we have a great lake house coming on the market in Indiana, which we are partnering with Joey Atkins over at Home Realty Group. And Joey's a great guy. This is a 6,000 plus square foot lake house, 7 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms on Koontz Lake in Indiana. So that's Walkerton, Indiana, by the way. So that's about 2 hours outside of Chicago and about 2 hours from Fort Wayne. So if anybody's looking for a lake house, give us a call, 630-921-0611. Real quick, just want to thank last week's guest, John Hoffman. He is the broker owner of Y Rent Real Estate and a big REO broker in the Chicago metro area. We talked a lot about foreclosures, what's going on in that market, what we think the future holds in that market, and maybe we can get into that a little bit with Jake as well. So lots going on. We're going to get into some headlines as well. My partner, Michael Lafito, has a great property coming on the market in Wheaton, coming on for $979, 3,500 plus square feet, 6 bedrooms, 4 baths in Wheaton. Check it out. If you guys want information on any of these houses, by the way, that lake house is coming on the market at $899. So 6,000 square feet, 7 bedrooms, 4 baths, $899. So not bad. All right. Without any further ado, I want to bring on our guest because I have a lot I want to talk about with Jake Clopton. Jake is the founder of Clopton Capital and also Clopton Insurance, which primarily focuses on business insurance and commercial building. So we'll talk with Jake about that. We'll also talk with him about just what's going on in the commercial market and where he thinks that's all going. So without any further ado, let's bring Jake on and get right into it. Jake, how you doing? Jake, can you hear me? All right, Jake, I think is muted or can't hear me. We are going to get back with him in a second here and make sure that he can hear us. I'm going to let me just message him real quickly and make sure that he can hear us here. But what we want to talk with Jake about today is, first of all, what exactly is Clopton Capital? Who do they service? Who are their customers? And of course, they're located right here in Chicago Metro. And let me just get with Jake real quick here. Bear with me, folks. I'm going to make sure Jake can hear. Hey, Jake. Are you with us? All right. So Jake is having, I think, Jake, are you muted? He might be muted. Let me see if we can. Get Jake back on here. Having a little technical difficulty. So let's see what we can do. Hey, Jake. All right, guys. So we're having a little bit of technical difficulty with Jake. I'm going to see if...
Larry, can you hear me now?
Oh, there we go. There we go. There we
go. Okay, finally. How you doing?
Awesome. Yeah, good. I'm glad we figured that all out. I don't know if that was on my end or your end.
I don't know.
But no big deal.
So, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Glad to have you here. And like I was saying in our opening, I have a lot I want to talk to you about because, you know, your companies are primarily involved in commercial real estate, commercial lending, and commercial insurance, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so you are going to have a really good... you know, you're going to really tapped into that market in terms of what's going on, not only in the Chicago market, but you do business all over the country. So this is going to give us.
Yeah, we really don't market geographically. Like we're really a nationwide firm. So even though we're based here, we're really nationwide.
Yeah. And that is what interests me because, you know, there's so much going on in the commercial market in large metropolitan areas. And there's a lot of, you know, it's very fluid, right now. And I guess it depends on which metropolitan area we're talking about. But before we get into it, give everybody a little background on Jay Clopton, Clopton Financial, who you work with, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started this company 16 years ago. We were originally just a capital markets firm, so, you know, reconnect borrowers with capital sources. Since that time, we've added a few more verticals, like you mentioned. So we're also a insurance agency focused exclusively on commercial property. We're a real estate brokerage that just opened up this year. So we're helping people find property and list. We also do commercial and residential solar, and we're a 1031 qualified intermediary. So everything is, you know, really comes from just having the database and clientele of commercial property owners and operators. And that's who we typically work with, right? So small to middle market, you know, if we're talking about the capital market side, it's anything from like a couple million dollars and up in loan sizes. The average is probably somewhere in the 5 to 15 to 10 million bucks range, something like that. But we do some, you know, much larger stuff, like some of the largest deals I'm working on right now, like 150 million, all asset types nationwide.
Awesome. So you would typically, you know, what it sounds like is you would work with a very wide range of investors. You might be working with someone buying a six flat in the city, or you might be working with somebody that is buying a 300 unit, you know, 10 story building.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. That's correct.
Yeah. You've been in business since 2009 and, what do you got going on right now? Anything, in the city you want to talk about? Anything anywhere else in the country you want to talk about in terms of thing? I know you're big. Well, go ahead. Get into that a little bit.
I was going to say the stuff that we end up doing a lot of is really whatever's currently going on in like the market cycle. And also like whatever types of property, private equity tends to be chasing, you know, and people are kind of piling into, like for instance, we're doing a ton of storage, right. And also a lot of car washes. It's just the latest property type that a lot of, you know, private equity firms are kind of piling into. But on a day to day, you know, a lot of our, you know, volume also is just core property types, like multifamily, still doing a little bit of office. I think there's actually a lot of opportunity there. You know,
wait, you retail, think there's a lot of opportunity like where,
you know, where's in office property.
Okay, because that's part of what I want to talk to you about with, you know, office space in the metropolitan areas, right?
Yeah,
it's it's really in flux. You know, there's not everybody came rushed back to the office after the pandemic. So there's a lot of space available. And what do you see happening to that space in all these larger metropolitan areas that aren't filling back up with the tenants that previously had occupied them?
Right. Yeah. So, okay. Obviously, so office took a big hit because of the pandemic, right? Everybody had to go home. But it stayed that way because of, you know, what I believe is that like dislocation in the labor market, where after the pandemic, you know, you had twice as many job openings as you did like workers. So all, you know, all the power in the hiring process was really in the hands of the employee, right? I mean, they could demand to work at home and companies didn't really have an option. And I was saying this a few years ago that, you know, once the labor market cools down and that power in the hiring process goes back to employers, I think you're going to see, you know, them start demanding people come back to the office, which they are. I mean, look what Amazon just did a couple of days ago, said everybody has to come back. Right. And we're starting to see that more and more and more. And I think and at the end of the day, I think the reason it stuck around was really just that, you know, what was probably a temporary dislocation in the labor market. And the Fed certainly has cooled that down with, you know, raising rates astronomically. And now we're starting to see, you know, the economy cool off and that's reversing a little bit. So I do think, you know, we hit the bottom in, you know, the economics of, you know, office assets. And there's probably a lot of opportunity in those types of deals, you know, to do some really good value adds and to make a lot of money. Some of that office space, though, is just unusable, right? I mean, the C-class office buildings that are in CBD, stuff like that, there's, I mean, those two, you have to figure out something else to do with them. I've seen a lot of, you know, I mean, the first thing everybody thinks of is just turn them into apartment buildings, but the floor plate plans are just a lot of, you really can't do that in the layout of a lot of office property, right? I mean, you can with some of it, and I'm seeing a lot of that done. And in like cities like Chicago, I mean, some of these cities are putting together like big incentive packages to try to repurpose this space. But I think there's some of that will happen, but others of these buildings, I don't know. Maybe they just need to get torn down and repurposed or something.
Yeah, I agree with you. A lot of these C buildings, they're going to be more difficult to get people back into because those people are probably never coming back again to those office spaces. But, you know, you brought up something that I was going to talk to you about anyway, and you're probably familiar with it because if I read correctly, you own several apartment complexes, correct?
Yeah, correct. In Chicago.
In Chicago. Okay. And what would you say the in terms of unit numbers, what kind of unit numbers are we talking about with these complexes?
You know, so we own a portfolio. They're all kind of on the smaller to mid-size scale. So anywhere from like 10 to 30 units total.
Okay.
We over the last couple of years, and so I mentioned in the beginning, we're really expanding the verticals of what we're doing in-house at my company. And I try to not run too many races. So I've actually been divesting away from direct property ownership and really focusing on, you know, building out the company further and expanding. It's hard to, you know, what at least I believe was appropriately, you know, asset manage all these properties around here and also be running like six different sides of this company, which is really my focus going forward. So, you know, I'm paring down that portfolio a little bit.
Oh, okay. So my question is this though, because I wanted to bring up this program that Chicago has, and you kind of hinted at it. I'm not sure if it's the same program I'm talking about, but it's called Illinois, Affordable Illinois. Are you familiar with that?
Vaguely. Yes.
So Affordable Illinois is a, I don't know if it's a new program, but a newer program. And, I'm going to bring something up on the screen here real quick, if I can, but, let me see if I can get this up here. It's a program where Illinois is offering landlords like yourself that own buildings that have seven or more units in them, really solid tax advantages to agree in return for fixing up the units, you know, cosmetically, getting them, you know, nice and everything, and keeping them affordable for 30 years. Now, it's only available to landlords that have buildings with seven units or more in them. So, for instance, if I own a three flat or a four flat, I would not qualify for this. But someone like you who right. has a 10 unit or 30 unit would qualify for it. And from my understanding, the tax benefits really outweigh the that trade-off in updating the unit and keeping it affordable for the next 30 years. That's the trade-off. And supposedly there's a lot of landlords out there taking advantage of that with these larger properties.
Sure. I think in cities like Chicago, right? Like you absolutely have to take advantage of the local government incentives. But there's there's no such thing as free money, right? There's going to be a lot of strings come attached to that, which is why, I mean, I've stayed away from a lot of like the local government stuff around here because there are a lot of strings that come attached to it, even Section 8 stuff. There's other programs, you know, if anybody's in Chicago, the biggest programs that I personally took advantage of were, you know, the local energy efficiency type of programs. Like for instance, I bought two buildings that were kind of older. You know, they were owner managed, kind of landlord at the time had been just, you know, something would break, he would go in there and fix it temporarily until it broke again. Mm-hmm. There's incentives from, you know, utility companies, other area, you know, other parts of the government here where they'll go in and basically give you a ton of free efficiency upgrades. Like, you know, replacing the boilers, the hot water tanks, you know, the insulation, insulating the pipes, all this stuff. And I think the two buildings in particular I'm thinking about, we got something almost like $500,000 worth of, you know, energy efficiency upgrades. And that's a huge difference, you know, on your expense side. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the, you know, one of the programs that we did take advantage of pretty heavily. But I've tended to stay more towards like market rate type of rents, and a little bit further away from some of the, like the government mandated stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, you know, when I first heard that, I was like, you know, agreeing to keep something affordable for the next 30 years. What does that mean? You know, what's affordable?
Well, that's a subjective word. What's affordable. Yeah. So
that's the thing that
it would be difficult to, yeah, it'd be difficult to put a cap on your revenues, right? When you know that, you know, maybe they freeze the property tax a little bit, but the other expenses around here are going up pretty heavily. And if you can't appropriately offset your expense load by, you know, raising your rents to where it needs to be, I can see some people getting into trouble there. And if you're in one of those programs, you know, the city's just going to say, okay, well, we're giving you a tax break. So deal with
it. You know, there's one thing I left out that I need to add to that. So it's a percentage of the building. So in other words, if you have 10 units in a building, you wouldn't have to keep them all affordable. You'd have to keep 30% of them affordable is what I think the
right. It's still a pretty healthy chunk.
Yeah, still pretty healthy chunk. And, you know, how do you raise the value of a commercial building, right? You can do that yourself just by raising the rents 10%, right? I think not being able to do that, even with some, you know, significant tax advantage, can get you into some murky waters down the road. But from what I've read, the people that have participated in this program, actually they're saying it's working out pretty well for them, but you know, it's a long haul, 30 years.
It is a long haul. It is a long haul. Chicago has, you know, a history of programs like this. There was some other, you know, affordability programs where they keep the taxes really low to keep rents at a certain level, that, that were around. One of my buildings was in those. I can't remember the exact name of it. That program went away because there was a mysterious fire sprinkler event in the office that held all of that paperwork, and all of it got destroyed.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And that's at least the story. And then it was impossible to get back into it. So you got to understand my skepticism with some of the cities.
When you start having fires and paperwork disappearing, yeah, you're going to start getting a little skeptical, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like the idea of having kind of like free range to properly manage your own properties, right? And also kind of keep, maybe not in so much other cities, but like especially a big city like Chicago that has a lot of local renter laws. You know what I mean? I mean, the other side of that coin is I guarantee you, and I don't know this program extremely well, but I guarantee you there's other strings attached, right? Like, can you evict people and this and that, right? I mean, it's hard enough to do that here as it is. I've had people stay in the units for over 12 months without being able to get them out. So, you know, that's why, you know, like I like to keep a little bit more control over, over these properties.
Yeah, it makes sense. Once you let that control up in writing for like a 30-year period, I mean, you know.
30 years seems like a long time.
It seems like a long time, yeah. But that is the deal. That's what their plan is. So I guess like with a lot of the assets that you hold, whether they're 10-unit buildings or 30 or 40, whatever they are, some of these are probably Section 8 or no? Are they all just straight market?
No, primarily stayed away from Section 8 type rents. I've had them in the past, and you do get higher rents, but, and this is again maybe not so much so in other markets, I've noticed that the managing those types of units, and then also like the repairs you have to do, you tend to have to do afterwards, you know, we kind of offset the advantage you get from it. We do have some Section 8 people, right? Like we've got some like senior citizens and stuff like that. And there's also like some Catholic charities around here that do, you know, that get help people with their rent, stuff like that. So we have a couple of units, but what we do is primarily market rate.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's hard enough to manage these things, right? Without, getting into, you know, I have to say, I know some people that do Section 8 and they don't really have any issues with it, but it is a different animal. And you have to meet different thresholds with Section 8.
You know, it is. I think whenever you're taking advantage of a program like that, you really need to know what you're doing.
Right? Yeah.
And appropriately be able to manage that type of stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, do you guys, I'm going to guess that with the type of financing you do and the clients that you have, like, let's say I came to you and I said, hey, Jake, I came across this building. It's six units. It's in West Chicago. Here's the numbers. And, you know, as with a DSCR loan, you know, it supports itself. Do you do those kind of loans?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll do anything that is a loan amount, you know, somewhere around like $2 million and up. That's where it really starts to make sense for what we do, right? And think of me like, this is what I tell people, think of me more like a service provider, right? So I bring in loan opportunities and effectively working for the borrower that's coming to us. And we take a very wide netcast approach to the capital markets for what we do. So any one deal we bring in, I may talk to 300 different bankers on it, right? So that's really the advantage we bring to the table. I think, you know, somebody that's out here and, you know, looking just to arrange a loan on their own may talk to, I don't know, two or three banks. Whereas, you know, we're going to provide just a much more deeper breadth of lenders. And you think of just, because of what we're doing, we effectively are able to access a much deeper capital markets and get better rates and terms. That's for like, you know, that's how I kind of position what we do for some of the smaller operators. For some of the bigger operators, like we are basically like an outsourced capital markets department. Mm-hmm. And we're effectively taking the time constraint off of their hands to help them, you know, put together and acquire deals. So if you think about it, like these real estate companies, they've got like a couple acquisitions guys sitting there and they have a buy box of stuff they have to get all over the country. And they'll use us to, you know, model and put together their finance as well as insurance and stuff like that.
Okay. Interesting. Hey, we're going to take a 30-minute break, but I want to get your 30-second break, excuse me. But I want to, when we come back, I want, that'd be a long break. I want to, I want to get your thoughts on some of the headlines and some of the things that have happened even over the last week in the real estate market and see what your thoughts are on that and where we're going. And we'll be right back in like 30 seconds, not minutes.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio, sponsored in part by TrustedAgentUSA.com, the ultimate real estate matchmaker, saving you thousands. Now back to Larry, the real estate therapist.
Hey, so we're back with Jake Clopton, the owner and founder at Clopton Capital and Clopton Insurance. Jake, glad to have you with us. Really appreciate your insight on some of these things. Let's get into rates for a second, real quick, okay? So right now, 30-year fix, we're at about 6.1%. At FHA, VA, anywhere from 5.3 to 5.7, depending on what product you're getting. And 15-year fixed are also right around, I believe, 5.7, 5.75. What's your take on interest rates? Do you see them going down? What do you see happening with all this?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to rates today, I just because of the environment we're in, it depends on which side of the yield curve you're talking about, right? Which is really just because the yield curve has been inverted, meaning like short-term rates were higher than long-term rates for so long. Mm-hmm. And now it's really flattened out. But when the Fed lowered rates by 50 basis points, you know, I think one of the most important things to recognize is that they lowered short-term rates, right? The Fed funds rate. And that doesn't necessarily translate into long-term rates, like those indexes, like the 10-year, which a lot of the rates that you're quoting are based more on longer-term rates on treasuries than just the Fed funds rate. I think before the rate decrease on Wednesday, you had seen, you know, treasuries really come down a lot, right? I mean, now they're in the mid-threes versus they were, you know, mid-fours before. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much further that's going to go in the short term for a particular reason. So, and I should trade interest rates, by the way. So I know a lot of other stuff. When the Fed lowered rates by 50 basis points, right? They're, you know, what they were doing effectively, and they have a dual mandate, right? It's inflation and, you know, a healthy labor market. What they were doing is kind of taking, you know, their eye off of inflation a little bit and focusing more on the labor market because, you know, seeing the unemployment rate tick up, you know, I think 4 quarters in a row, which, you know, is not great. But inflation is still a little higher than I believe what they would want as a target, which is 2%. When they lowered rates by 50 basis points, something interesting happened, right? The Fed funds rate went down, but you saw longer term rates kind of tick up a little bit. So the 10-year rate actually rallied after they lowered rates. And I believe, and so the 10-year longer term rates tend to be more anchored to inflation expectations. And so when they brought down the short term rates, I believe, you know, the concept was that inflation will theoretically maybe remain more elevated than it would have if they hadn't. And so I'm not sure how much further those long term rates are going to come down in the short term, but from what I see out in the marketplace, the real need is not necessarily long-term rates. It's the short end of the curve because, you know, getting anything done with construction is incredibly difficult right now because all of your construction is going to be anchored towards short-term interest rates, right?
So
it's just interesting because it's so expensive. And, you know, I think that's one thing that's really driving inflation in the housing market, is because you've got supply constraint, because it's so expensive to build anything. And real estate, at the end of the day, as you know, Larry, it's just a math problem, right? And
oh, yeah.
A lot of these deals,
yeah.
The math just isn't mathing. And, yeah. You know, that's where I think the real need is.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and we're supposed to get another 50 basis point decrease by the end of the year. So I think you very well could see the yield curve go from, you know, earlier this year inverted to more of like a more natural upward sloping yield curve, mm-hmm. with longer short-term rates coming down healthy, but, you know, those indexes kind of staying where they are, or maybe coming up a little bit because of inflation expectations.
Yeah, I agree with you in that I think where we're at right now, which is, let's just say, around 6%, okay? I think the interest rate fell in anticipation of the Fed lowering their rate, and it's already kind of baked in there. So I agree with you. I don't see that coming down a lot in the next in the short term, as you said, but you never know for the right. future. I'll tell you what, if they drop it another 50 basis points in December, I mean, that's aggressive. Wouldn't you agree?
It is aggressive. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the real estate market would use it, right? But the other side of the coin is, you know, if the Federal Reserve, that's an aggressive reduction, even 50 basis points was aggressive. And if you listen to the conference afterwards, right, when Jerome Powell was speaking, he said, oh, you know, we just lowered 50 basis points. Don't worry. We're not concerned and everything is so healthy. I don't know how much I believe that, because that's a pretty aggressive drop. And that means that there is concern out there in the broader economy that they're worried about. And if they drop another 50 basis points aggressively by the end of the year, I think you're going to start to see, you know, investor confidence out there come down a little bit, because it's more of like a canary in the coal mine, right? It's like there's mm-hmm. a reason why they're reducing interest rates that quickly. And really, it kind of sounds like they're behind the curve a little bit and lowering rates, and they stayed elevated for too long and something might be about to break. So that's the bigger concern.
I was surprised by I was sure they were only going to drop it a quarter point. I was really surprised when they dropped it. Yeah, I was surprised when they dropped it 50 basis points. And man, if they do that again in December, I agree with you. I think that's kind of a canary in a gold mine. Like, why? You know, we're at 2.5% annual inflation. Yes, the job market has cooled, but recently, like the most recent unemployment apps came back and that actually fell. So, you know, if those figures are correct, so it shows kind of like, you know, the job market is still fairly resilient. We're not seeing wholesale layoffs across the board or anything like that.
It is right now. Like if you took a static picture of it right now, absolutely. But if you look at the trajectory of where things are going, that's where it starts to get a little concerning.
Yeah. Yeah. So last thing I want to cover with you before I let you go, and to enjoy your weekend, go golfing or sailing or something, whatever you're going to do.
Yeah, man.
So recently Zillow, there was an analysis by Zillow where it showed that, mortgage payments are now cheaper than rent in nearly half of all U.S. metro areas, and in 22 out of 50 of the largest metro areas, mortgage payments are cheaper than rent. And one of those areas, well, a couple of them, for instance, are Chicago, Philadelphia, Chicago, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, are showing, you know, real value to people in terms of mortgage payments being less than rent. But then in other areas like Philadelphia, it's pretty much a wash on either one of those. So my question to you is, you own a lot of apartments in Chicago. with now that kind, you know, for a while it was like more advantageous to rent than to buy. Sure. Because of high interest rates, high cost. But now with interest rates coming down and some downward pressure on the cost of home ownership, you know, now rents are becoming more expensive in Chicago than it is to own. How are you dealing with that as a business, as a man that owns, you know, a lot of apartments?
Yeah, I'm always curious about that index, right? With just when they compare just mortgage payments to rent, and if they're really taking into account like the full cost of home ownership, right, versus, you know, renting. I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things you have to pay for that are not necessarily included in that mortgage payment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question rents here. You have really gone up a lot, right? I don't know currently what percentage, you know, on the average it is of like the average, you know, salary around Chicago, but I guarantee you it's a lot. And I think that again comes down back to the conversation we had before about construction costs and like, you know, supply constraint. They just need more housing, right? And that's really what it comes down to, is just the lack of housing supply that, you know, people are able to get out there and build, which, you know, now that rates are coming down, hopefully we're going to start to see a lot more construction starts and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, it is definitely a challenge. I haven't seen personally an uptick in, you know, late rent payments or stuff, in, you know, anything like that. I mean, hopefully it stays that way. We tend to be more in the workforce type housing sector. Which I think is an area where, you know, people can transition either upward into or downward into from like class A or like, you know, class C type apartments. So that's a very resilient space. But I do think you're right. I think some of that like luxury apartment class A stuff, that's getting just really, really, I know people that are paying, you know, as much for one bedroom downtown as I pay for my mortgage, right?
I saw a really nice one bedroom on the market on LSD right there, you know, beautiful lake views, everything. One bedroom, nice, you know, nice updated place, $3,200, not including the monthly HOA.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Dude, that's more than I pay for my house in Naperville.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. I know, and I'm like, do you know how many times bigger my house is? But I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, it's like not everybody is ready for, you know, homeownership. But I don't know. Believe me, I think about this very, you know, quite often when I hear about like what people are paying downtown for rents, and then like how, you know, how taxed everything is in Chicago. I'm like, how it always kind of feels a little bit like a house of cards, but it kind of keeps working. I don't know how much further.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, look, Chicago is a great city, but Chicago's also not New York, right? I mean, the average salaries here are a little bit, I mean, they're good, right? But I think we're starting to approach very high rent levels. When I first moved here, something like 20 years ago, Chicago rents felt like one of the most affordable things anywhere, right? You had this huge kind of international metropolitan city and the rents were very affordable. And I mean, I'm starting to really date myself, but you know, I've had like a two bedroom for like 50
years. Talking to me, Jake.
But yeah, it's just progressively, you know, accelerated over the years. And you're not wrong. I don't know how much further it can go on because I think it's far outpacing like, you know, the rise of wages.
It's crazy. Some of the rents I see are out there, but you know, I don't know. It's all local, right? Real estate is all local. Some places rents are coming down, like in Austin. Some places rents are staying about the same. And in some places, they're still going through the roof. So it really is just a matter of where you are.
I mean, those Sunbelt areas we do a lot of work in. And those, interesting enough, like a lot of these like Texas markets, San Antonio, Austin, places like that, that's where I'm seeing deals with actually some of the most like, you know, trouble. Because in a lot of those areas, it's where people took on that really high leverage, you know, variable interest rate type bridge money to do these value adds. And you're right. I mean, the rents stagnated and or coming down. And those, you know, those expectations just aren't working out the way that they thought they were going to. And, you know, the deals that they were doing were priced to perfection. And, you know, you think, because we've heard for so many years, like, oh, anything in, you know, anything in Austin is, it's just got to be gold. But they took on so much, a lot of these, you know, syndicators took on so much debt. They're just really stuck in these things now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those markets had huge run-ups. So they come down a little bit. They're still a lot higher than what they started, but you're not wrong. There's definitely some, you know, some pain in those areas.
How about what's going on in the Florida market? Because Florida's shifting big time right now.
Yeah. I haven't really seen the same rent issues in Florida. What I'm seeing more in Florida, and this is just more insight from our insurance company, is the insurance aspect in Florida, right? The wind covers. And those policies are just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've seen, you know, a policy in an apartment building go from like 20,000 to like 200,000. I mean, like overnight, right, on the renewal. And that, and at the end of the day, I mean, that's real money. That's going to seriously impact your property values.
Oh, heck,
that's
yeah.
The biggest problem I see.
Now, do you guys insure properties in Florida?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because a lot of insurers have left Florida.
They have. A lot of insurers are leaving a lot of markets. And I think anybody who owns property today, I think the part of your P&L to really keep an eye on is the expense side, because the expenses are you know, are really getting out of hand, and insurance is one of those. And to not wait until, you know, a week before your renewal to start looking, because a lot of these people are getting renewals, and, you know, and like back in the day, you would just be like, oh, I'll get 3% renewal and, you know, whatever. But now that they're doubling or tripling sometimes.
So what makes you guys stay in that market?
Florida. Well, I mean, we're an agency, right? So we're similar to the capital market side, where we can broker to, you know, dozens of different insurance companies. But it's just one of those areas where I think people need, you know, groups like ours the most, you know, to help them like efficiently place the right policies.
Yeah. And that's right. You're more in commercial. What I'm seeing is a lot of homeowners in Florida. I just moved two people back to the Chicago metro area from Florida, just simply because, you know, it's kind of out of control there with, like you said, especially for homeowners, residential insurance costs are insane. They're just crazy, and they're pricing.
Oh, yeah. All the residential stuff falls right into the same bucket with insurance companies. Yeah. So there's two things that are really affecting the insurance market. you know, one is there's more losses, right? Just there's more weather, more climate, and I'm not here to debate climate change, but there just are. And the other side of that is, you know, material costs and input costs are just astronomically higher. So there's the frequency of loss is higher, and the cost to fix it is much higher. And that just at the end of the day translates into higher policies. And, you know, the whole idea of insurance, right, is spreading risk. So, you know, if one area gets hit pretty bad, it's going to raise, you know, all these ships. So it's just the entire industry is seeing it.
Yeah. One area gets hit bad and they sneeze, you know, the rest, everybody else gets sick, right? Because somebody's paying for that.
Right. Right. It's like health insurance, right? I mean, the low risk pool has to offset.
Yeah, I call it death insurance, not health insurance. You spoke earlier about, you know, some of the challenges, and one of them was just supply side, not supply side, but just supply inventory. And that's what's keeping prices high because building is so expensive. So the NAHB, National Association of Home Builders, just recently came out with a stat that they're a little more confident about the future. It went from like 39 to 41, so not some huge jump, but they're a little more confident, but they're still really bogged down, builders, that is, by the cost of building. It's just, it's keeping a lot of builders from building. We haven't built enough in the last 10 years. And we're still down about 2.8 million homes countrywide.
Yeah. I mean, the economics of housing is just still remains a great place to invest just because the demographics, right, are so strong. And there's just such a lack of supply of housing.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea being, 2.6 or whatever, a million houses short. I mean, that's a big number. Like, where are all these people, right? I've been hearing, the crazy thing is I have been hearing that statistic since I got into this industry, a decade and a half ago. And I don't know what the real long-term solution is to it necessarily. Part of the problem is in a lot of these areas, it is really just hard to get local government approval to build anything. If some of these local governments get out of the way, I think you'd build a lot faster. The other side is just cost of doing it. Mm-hmm. Now that rates are coming down, it'll get a little bit more affordable. But you're right. The other side is just, input costs, and it's just extremely high. Some of that is, the labor side. So hopefully that'll come down a little bit. Costs are right. Certainly we're rising higher than, or faster than, the values of some of these buildings. So that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I appreciate you joining us today. This was a great conversation. We covered a lot. My last question to you, Jake, is did you grow up a Mets fan?
A Mets fan?
Yeah.
I'm from upstate New York in Rochester.
Okay.
No, not so much.
Because I was going to cut you off clean if you grew up a Mets
fan. Now that I'm here, we're going to go with the Cubs.
Well, they actually finished pretty strong this year. I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. They're not getting in the playoffs, but they actually finished pretty strong. But the Mets basically, I'm older than you, but they basically ruined my life when I was 12 years old in 1969. And it goes back too far from you, but just look up the amazing Mets. And yeah, I've been in therapy since 1969 when I was 12. But listen, it was great having you on. If someone wants to get in touch with you, if there's an investor out there that, wants to get in touch with Clopton Capital, how do they get in touch with you?
I'm exceptionally easy to find. LinkedIn, Jay Clopton, or just call our company and ask for me. I'm more than happy to chat.
Awesome. All right, Jake, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
All right. I'll see you. All right, everybody. That was Jake Clopton, the founder of Clopton Capital. What a great conversation. We're going to take a 30-second break, and we will be right back.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio, sponsored in part by TrustedAgentUSA.com, the ultimate real estate matchmaker, saving you thousands. Now back to Larry, the real estate therapist.
All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up for this Saturday, September 21st. I hope all of you guys have a great weekend. Get out there, have some fun. The summer's winding down, but we still got some good weather ahead of us. So last thing I wanted to cover with you guys, you know, not all real estate agents are created equally. And one of the things that we do here at Lux Group and what I do and our other agents do is we put our active marketing plan and our active marketing, what we do in writing. We want you to see exactly what we're going to do for you in terms of digital marketing, print marketing, and anything else we're going to do out of the box that's going to bring more eyes on your property when you first come on the market. So the thing that we do a little different from some others is we put our marketing plan in writing for you in this beautiful pamphlet, about 20 pages. It's going to speak to, like I said, our digital marketing, our direct mail, some of the text code marketing that we do. And one of the things we do that's unique is we'll actually put pictures of your house on the sign with the text code that will allow people to immediately get all the information they need about that particular property. So, you know, drill it down when you're looking for a realtor. Find out what exactly is that agent going to do for you to get you the highest possible price in the shortest amount of time, keeping in mind that the longer you're on the market, the farther away you get from your list price. So keep that in mind when you're marketing your home. It's not always a good look to list it high because you can always come down. That's a good way to end up on the market and go through a lot of price adjustments, which is never a good look. So if you want a copy of our active marketing plan, give me a call, 630-921-0611, or you can just text us at 630-921-0611. Just say marketing plan, and I'm going to send you a digital copy of our marketing plan and how we're going to sell your house for top dollar in the shortest amount of time possible. We think out of the box here at Lux Group, and we'd love to show you how we do that. Having said that, you guys have a great weekend, and we will see you next week with another great guest on the Real Estate Marketing Real Estate Radio show. All right, see you guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for joining us on Real Estate Radio with your host, Larry Shagman, the real estate therapist and top producing broker. Now go to TrustedAgentUSA.com and save thousands when you sell, buy, or invest. Illinois license number 475-145-795. Tune in next week for the ultimate real estate radio experience. Thanks for joining us on